folks, we are back on the Flactic.com Tea Talk podcast. My name is Stefan Tiedorf, sitting here as per usual with my co-host Scott McCloud. Scotty, how are you?
I'm about like this 2012 Augusta National Masters Cup, which has not got a logo on it anymore. I'm a little worn out. It's that time of year. Things are really busy in the golf industry. And obviously, there's so much going on with the Masters this week and a lot in golf that, hey, you know what? We're all tired, right? But a little different than maybe why you're tired these days.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can't complain, right? Like, there's only so much I can do. Get some decent sleep. Got 9 holes in yesterday, so
nice. Did Bo caddy?
No, he's not ready for that yet. Okay. We'll look forward to that, but not bad. You know, 3 over, couple bad bogeys. I was striping on the first couple holes, driver like right down the middle, then get to a par 5. I'm like, should I just let loose on one, just try to whip it? I've been working with those super speed sticks. You know, we had Ryan Robillard a few weeks ago bringing those, so I'm thinking, you know what, let's just try to rip one just straight right into the woods on a very short par 5. So a couple bad bogeys, couple birdies out there, 9 holes, 3 over. What can you do? It is
at least you played.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, really, I mean, that's the cool part. Golf course is now up our way, starting to open up. And, you know, especially this week, there was a ton on our openings calendar for this part of the country that are starting to open up, which is great. You know, everybody's going to be able to get out of their house, take those golf swings they've been making all winter in front of their TV and take them outside. And hey, as we said, it's Masters week. So
it's the week where the itch really starts. The course is going to be packed this weekend. Before we get into all that, let's give a shout out to our musical guest this week. We have Ellis Meek, originally from Brockville, Ontario, now residing up in Toronto. Thank you for your music, and stick around to check out his song at the end of the podcast there. All right, Scotty, where do you want to start? Want to hit our week that was?
Yeah, might as well. I mean, you know, last week we had the first professional major of the year in the A&A Inspiration on the LPGA Tour. So that got a lot of attention. And I think that might take up some of our, you know, the week that was this week. Do you want me to get started?
Yeah, why don't you hit your birdie off the top? Let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely was, as we both mentioned last week, was a tournament we wanted to watch. Did end up having time to watch both. They lined up perfectly with the Valero wrapping up and going right into the A&A. It was a great couching day on Sunday. But why don't you hit your birdie for the week?
Yeah, couching in a big way. Mine started at the drive, chip, and putt at 8 in the morning.
Right,
finished at 8 in the night.
A couple Canadians, you know, picking up wins.
Yeah, which was nice. Alexis Carr got first place there. Anna Wu was second in the girls 7 and 9. And Cole Roberts from Peterborough was seventh in the boys 7 and 9. So nice to see. Fourth Canadian that has had a win there at that championship. And nice to see it back. My birdie of the week, though, was for Patty Tavatenakit, which we're going to have to get to know that name a lot. You know, been watching this player for quite some time, believe it or not. I was one of the very few people that were actually following her on social media heading into this week. Noted her over the years, obviously playing junior, very successful as a junior, winning a couple of junior world championships. And back when she was 14, when she won the Callaway World Junior, you know, she was still hitting it. She was hitting a 260 back then. She shot 60 in winning that tournament. So somebody always that you've been watching, but, you know, heading into this tournament, she was 103rd in the world. You weren't really expecting her to, you know, kind of dominate the golf course. And certainly she did. I mean, 18 under to win a major, goes from world 103 to world number 13, bogey free in the final round, which, you know, it wasn't like she was hitting every single green. She had to get up and down, and she had to hold off Lydia Ko as well. So great to see a new face emerge as a winner on the LPGA Tour. Brings even more excitement to the game. And I think she's got huge potential. Obviously, driving the ball, averaging 323 off the tee is pretty incredible as well.
Yeah, I was getting into a little bit of an argument on Twitter about that. Someone was like, how is she hitting 323 with only 157 mile per hour ball speed? And it's, I mean, you just must not know anything about fitting if that is the case. It probably hits it with very low spin, high launch, carries it as far as it can, and then uses the roll of the golf course. And the argument I was getting with somebody was like, well, they wouldn't go that far in a PGA Tour event. It's like, no, they go further because yeah, it's even exactly. it's more hard out there. And they're, well, how would Bryson average this and she would average that? It's like, how far do I really want to go into this argument? I'm going to have to answer all your questions that you could Google yourself. Bryson doesn't hit driver on all the holes they track driver on, like all that type of stuff. So yeah, it's bombs. That's it's awesome to see. And yeah, I'm going the same route. I have a birdie for Lydia Ko this week, who arguably had the greatest final round in a women's major championship. Unfortunately, wasn't able to get done with her 10 under 62. But, you know, back-to-back weeks where you get NB Park and now Lydia Ko, where it's, you know, turning back the clock to a couple players that, you know, every single week for the last decade prior to the last couple of years were winning every single tournament. So nice to see Lydia out there. And I think she's only, what, like 18? Like,
it feels that way. She's been out there forever. I mean, 23, 24 now. But, you know, obviously she won the New Zealand Open when she was 14, started, you know, winning the CP Women's Open there when she was 15. You know, incredible as far as a player. Longevity as well. I mean, it was just like when we were talking about Lexi Thompson playing, you know, her 14th ANA at the age of 26. Same thing for Lydia Ko. She's been out there forever. Already has an established fan base. And, you know, her game waned there for a little while. But, you know, starting in November, Sean Foley was posting on Instagram and saying her game was in a beautiful place. And you could see her swing coming around and her confidence levels. And, you know, she did put in a lot of work with her putting as well. And, you know, it paid off. And she was, you know, she was 10 under after 11. So, I mean, she was deep there.
59 as far as watch. 59
yeah, definitely. Watch, yeah. And you're right. I mean, that was my honorable mention as well. I should throw that in there. I mean, it was a great round to watch. It was fun. Patty held her off though, but it certainly made for a great second storyline.
Absolutely. So you hit your honorable mention. I guess I'll go that route as well. We'll stick with some birdies. Start off fresh. Start off good. I'm going to give Lee Westwood a birdie, an early birdie for the week. He has his son caddying for him this week. And I think it's, you know, people are probably like, well, why would you do that? You already have such a good thing going with the girlfriend there and how well you've been playing. Well, 20 years ago this week, Lee Westwood missed the Masters because he went to the birth of this son who is now caddying for him. Just crazy full circle, as he said in all the interviews. You can tell it means a lot to him. We've talked about it. I think Lee's playing so good because golf isn't the most important thing in his life right now. And he's just kind of having fun out there in another way to do it. Bring the son out for the bag. They went out earlier a couple weeks ago and did like a son and father's trip, played a couple rounds out there for fun. And it wasn't just fun. Lee wanted him to get comfortable with that course. He wants him to be a caddy this week, which I think is just such a cool experience. And talk about a little bit of a pressure for a 20-year-old kid to go out around Augusta National as a caddy and put the work in. And, you know, even though he's been around golf his whole life, still probably going to be a little bit of a culture shock once you're inside the ropes carrying the bag.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of pressure. If anybody watched, you know, John Wood had a great Twitter thread showing all the inside, you know, caddy, obviously on tour, commentator now online, but he had a great Twitter thread explaining his yardage book for Augusta National, all the extra complications that it takes to caddy there. So certainly a lot of pressure on Lee Westwood's son. Probably feels that internally more than anything. I'm certain Lee is not putting that pressure on him, but obviously Westwood knows the golf course well. And, you know, this place draws you into so many emotions. And I think that's, you know, the part of it too, is that, you know, as you said, it's tied back to the birth of this son. And you know, I think that inspiration really keeps you engaged in the whole storylines of the week. And we all do too. I mean, that's part of the reason why we all love the Masters.
Do we got Jack Nicklaus 2.0 with the son on the bag picking up the win, or what do you think?
I don't know. I mean, certainly we've had a few questions about that. I mean, it could be. I mean, it's definitely going to get a lot of coverage this week, and especially if he plays well, it'll get played up even more. Would you love to see it? Certainly. I mean, we don't have the par three contest this year to kind of have all those feels of the family members and the kids being out there and stuff like that. So the fact that this is happening in the tournament itself, yeah, is amazing. And I don't think the son is probably going to take too much credit for dad's golf, but it could be just a great storyline to follow. Whether they're successful or not, I'm sure it'll get a lot of coverage.
And we'll get to our favorite storylines we wish to happen this week at some point on the back half of our interview this week when we talk about the Masters and break it down. We like to throw that out for every Masters. What's the storyline we want to happen that's realistic? And then, you know, what's the probably more unrealistic storyline we want to happen? So stick around for that. What's your par this week, Scotty?
My par this week had to do with the hullabaloo, we'll call it. There's a funny term about Jordan Spieth, obviously getting a victory almost, you know, 2.5 years or so. Well, since 17 Open Championship, since he's last won on the PGA Tour. A lot of people got very excited about it. And obviously they do. You know, he's a great young player. He brings a lot of eyeballs to the game. He's had success as far as the majors so far. But all of a sudden people were bringing back the, oh, all time. He's one of the all time players and so forth. That's fine. You know, they're going to be enthusiastic. And again, he's not done yet. But a little nugget that sort of came to light when the PGA Tour sent out their notes at the end of the day really put things in terms. And the fact that, you know, him getting his 12th win basically makes him the 92nd player in the PGA Tour history all time to hit that mark. And it ties him for 82nd all time as far as wins are concerned. So that just makes it relevant. I mean, we have a lot of recency bias, obviously, when we're talking about things. I just get, I wouldn't say tick, but I just, when people use all time stuff, they really got to dig deep to really see, you know, what they're talking about, because we're talking about, you know, going back 100 plus years in this case. Modern PGA Tour, obviously not that far, but this sort of shows you, and again, we can't compare eras and stuff like that. Certainly a lot of people are going to, you know, point back to, oh, well, you know, so-and-so won a four ball tournament and they put that as a win and stuff. And that's fine. That's fair. Just know that, you know, 12 wins puts him at a certain mark. Three majors obviously enhances that. But he's got a lot to do to be an all-time great at this point. So a par for me as far as saying, you know, there's more to come for him.
All right. I'm going to throw a hypothetical for you. What if he wins the PGA Championship this year? And doesn't, like, that's it. He wins that, but he does not win again. So now he's the sixth player to win the Grand Slam.
Yep.
He ends up with 13 wins, I believe, overall, right? Because he just got his 12th. Yep. Does that change it for you? Does that put him in one of the greatest of all times?
I think that would definitely creep it more into the conversation.
He's a Hall of Famer. Like, we know that.
Yeah. But because of the fact that he would only be the sixth to have held all those titles, not because of the overall number of wins, but the fact that he's there, which, you know, again, is an interesting argument, because you could start to discuss a player like, you know, a Brooks, for an example, or, you know, and where does he end up if he just wins the majors and doesn't get a lot of wins? I mean, you know, it's not like Andy North winning 2 U.S. Opens and a Westchester made him an all-time player of all time. He won 2 U.S. Opens, which is damn impressive. But yeah, it could creep it up there. I don't know if it puts him in the all-time. I think it makes it a something to talk about, but that would definitely have to be argued at that point. And look at, as well, the rest of his record as well, beyond just winning at the majors.
That's fair. I like that. A little hypothetical there. Maybe we'll see if Reed has a hypothetical for us. I was playing with him out on the golf course. He was throwing a bunch of them at me out there, and I didn't remember them. So I shot him a text. Maybe he'll get back to us by the end of this podcast, see if he has any Masters hypotheticals. My par for the week is the Masters on the Range. Early on in the week, I can watch it all day. The reason why I'm giving it a par is because unless you are an absolute just golf nut like we are, that is so boring. Like, I was watching it for literally an hour and a half, just sitting there holding the kid. The wife's just sitting there doing something on the phone. She's like, why are you watching this? It's so boring. Like, and then I sat back. I was like, if you weren't a golf fan, I can understand. They're just talking about, you know, the ball speed of so-and-so and the small change of this shaft of so, and like, I'm just right into it and I don't even think I looked at my phone for an hour and a half, and the wife's just like, this is putting me to sleep. So I'm giving it a par for that reason of, like, it takes up primetime TV for a lot of sports channels, but, like, hey, whatever. I'm down. I loved it. It was great. I'm probably going to do that this afternoon. I have a nice little nap with some more Masters on the Range. Unfortunately, we don't have the par 3 this year, so this is all we get.
Yeah, you know what? I think, I guess golf fans were all fascinated by that as you said, if you're not a massive golf fan, a geek as it is, you're not going to get a lot out of it. I just wish we wouldn't see the same clips over and over again. I mean, seeing Bryson go nuts, you know, over and over again with the same clip, you know, once you've seen it a couple times, that's kind of enough. Mm-hmm. Love to have more storylines coming from on the range. Unfortunately, you don't get to see that because you don't have the access there as far as journalists and so forth on the range. So you just get observations from a distance and guesses as what is going on, which, you know, is good and bad.
Yeah, I wish, because they're not doing a, you know, the par three contest, I really wish they did some practice round coverage more. And you know, mic up some guys, have them go out there, learn a little bit more about the golf course and just getting those chats. Like, I'd pay for that. I would not... You know, it's crazy to say, like, the
Masters first, committee will never sell it.
No, that's but, the problem. You know, as caddies, the practice round days are just so long and tiring. But those are the conversations I'd want to hear. So maybe one day they'll bring it in, but I don't see it. Why don't we wrap it up with your bogey for the week, Scotty? And then I got one more.
Yeah, my bogey for me is, you know, getting back to, you know, the golf courses and them getting open. I mean, one of the questions that we constantly get from people in DMs this time of year come in hot and heavy is people asking about particular golf courses if they're open. And, you know, we have to obviously peruse the websites all the time and find out what's going on, look at the social media for the courses. If we're not in touch personally with the operators, which, you know, you try not to bug them a lot. They've got a lot of stuff that's going on this time of year, which leads me to think that, you know, they need static things that people can refer to all the time. So if your golf course is open and I go to your website or your social media and it doesn't indicate that, I'm going to assume it's not open. So be clear about your communications, and, you know, you're leaving money on the table by not communicating. I get it. Golf courses are full and busy as it is, but if you want to take pressure off your phone system and your emails and things like that, that simple message of just saying you're open or not, there's a reason tens of thousands of people have referred to our calendar this week, because they're looking for that information because they can't find it on the golf course website. So once you have a date, be clear. If you're not open, say you're not open. That's just the bogey and a little bit of, you know, inside baseball, I guess, for inside golf to help the golf courses out.
Yeah, Scotty's saying, put me out of a job. I want you to tell people you're open versus me. I got other things I want to work on. But I agree. It just shows how far behind golf can be at times of not even recognizing the world. People don't want to call you. They just want to look on your website, look on your Twitter, make it easy for everyone. Let's move on. I probably should have went first since we were talking so much Masters, but we're going to continue to talk the Masters right after this bogey. And it's just Ricky Fowler. The fact he's not here. I find him such a compelling story. His game fits Augusta so well. His, you know, the way he putts and everything, that, like, I always felt this is the one he's going to win. And I still do believe he's going to win one of these. He's still young. He's about to hit technically his prime. If you look at golf careers at 30 to 35, 36 mark. So it's just unfortunate. He's missing one. And I think he'll be back next year. He's got to pick up a win or two throughout the year at some point. He'll get it together. You know it's going to drive him crazy this week. You know it drove him crazy seeing his buddy Jordan Spieth win again, and he hasn't. He's a competitive guy. Maybe go ride his motorcycle for a little bit this week, hit the dirt jumps, and then come right back and start shredding the golf course. It's just unfortunate to see, but I'm looking forward to see Ricky come back next year, and who knows? I think I'm going to have to start throwing some money on him in coming up tournaments. I feel like you're going to get some good odds, and he's going to be fierce and feisty and just wanting it bad right now.
Yeah, like you said, you know, it could probably end up being just like Spieth, where all of a sudden you've got that lull and then you pop back in there. And you're right. You know, he's had a lot of success at the Masters. He's had five top 15 finishes, finished second in 2018, another top 10 in 2019. So he does play this golf course well. And you know it's killing him to have to, you know, watch it on TV this week for sure. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't count him out. And if I was a betting person and said, hey, let's look at the next five Masters, how many of those will Ricky Fowler miss? I bet he doesn't miss any of them.
No. Speaking about not missing, I saw a crazy stat. Ian Poulter has only missed one cut at Augusta somehow. It might have been one cut in the last 10, 15 years, but like this stat from like 2011 to this year, one cut, something crazy like that. Just
wow.
Yeah, you're not getting great odds on it because the Masters, you know, it is an easier field to make the cut. It's one of those ones right. where you, if you miss, you aren't happy that you missed. But
generally not.
Yeah, and maybe I'll throw this out there now. I'm thinking for if you're looking for some money, you want a good bet. I'm going to say Will Zalatoris to miss the cut this week. First Masters, I think it's everything's come a little too fast. I think he's going to be seeing the bright lights of Augusta National, and you're getting some decent odds. I believe it's like 3.5 to 1 on him missing the cut. So there's my that's my lock of the week. Maybe we'll get to more bets. But who do we got on the podcast this week, Scotty? What are we going to talk about?
Yeah, obviously, Masters is in focus here. So Johan Benson is going to join us. For people who are not familiar with Johan, he's a PGA of Canada professional, but he's also been, he was a longtime member of the PGA Tour Canada, also a caddy as well on the PGA Tour. And he works with TSN and RDS as an analyst, and he is on the grounds of Augusta National Golf Club this week. And we're going to get his take on the week as it is and what we should be looking out for. Want to welcome a special guest in this week. Obviously, it's Masters Week, and we've got a man who's on the ground, a man who knows a lot about the game, both as a player, a club professional, a caddy, and also as an analyst for RDS TSN. Johan Benson, how are you, man?
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're doing good. We're doing probably not as good as you. You know, we're still in Canada, but, you know, you're enjoying obviously the confines of Augusta, Georgia. How are things at the Masters so far this year?
The Masters is awesome, but I have to say that personally, I'm feeling a little, I had my first COVID shot yesterday.
Oh, congrats.
It absolutely knocked me out.
Really?
I don't know who is getting different symptoms, but I mean, I can barely lift my left arm. I've had an awful stomach, and I'm very, very tired. I walked 18 with the Canadian boys today, and I mean, those hills really kicked my ass.
So this might be the time to ask you for a money game, because no other time would I ever play you. So
exactly. I literally cannot lift my left arm right now. I feel it's funny because my son was born. My son is 6 now, and just before he was born, I had to take a tetanus shot.
Okay.
And it feels just like that. Mm-hmm. The tetanus shot, it's like a really long needle that they put into the muscle of your shoulder, and I mean, it really rocked me. I didn't think I was going to be like that, and I've known some people that have gotten it this week too, and nothing. So I guess wild. It differs, but I know also some people that were bedsick for 2 to 3 days. So it's not my case. I'm just tired with like a really bad stomach and a bad shoulder, but I'll be fine by Thursday. I should be fine.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, you know what? Could be worse, right? You could not be in Augusta.
Yeah, in the end, you'll all be better for it, and we'll be able to watch the Masters without masks on and act like normal again. But you mentioned the walk today, walked around, followed Corey Connors and Mackenzie Hughes. Now, it's safe to assume you never were able to play in the Masters, but longtime caddy on the PGA Tour. Did you ever have a chance to walk it as a caddy out there?
Not as a regular caddy. I did come and visit, and I walked a few holes with Russell Knox in 2016. That was my first time at Augusta, Russell being a very close friend of mine. No, I never, I've caddied all 3 other majors, never caddied, at the Masters, per se. And then I came in November for RDS for the first time. I was very happy because I was in Quebec in September. Obviously, I was at Laval. Now I'm at Le Mirage. But I was courageous enough. I took the phone. I called the big boss of RDS. And I said, listen, I know you would like me to be part of the broadcasting for the Masters in November. But I said, I will be in the United States. I came back in the United States in October. You know, I'm a U.S. resident, but a Canadian citizen. So I can work in both countries. And I was courageous enough to call Dominic, the big boss of RDS. And I said, would you allow me to go to Augusta and help you guys out from there, since I'm going to have to come back, quarantine for 2 weeks to be on TV for 4 days? You know, do you see an advantage in having me on the ground in Augusta, Georgia? And he said, give me a, you know, the only thing we had to wait is to see if the TSN guys were actually coming. And so that took a few days or a few weeks. And then I got the right, I got the green light to come to Augusta, which was, it was easier for me, just driving up from West Palm, about an 8 hour drive, instead of having to come and spend almost 3 weeks in Quebec just to be 4 days on TV.
And so they make you wear the orange today, like everybody else was wearing. I saw they had the tan crew on, the TSN boys. So they didn't make you as the RDS guy to put on the orange outfit, right?
No, it's I think it's a running gag because James Duddy's not here.
Yeah.
So, but they did make a cardboard version of him. So they dressed him up in orange. So I think there's a running gag, but obviously I am not staying with right. The TSN crew.
Yeah.
I'm at a hotel and they rent a house every year. So I'm not in on all the gags, but they're very helpful. I'll be using the TSN cameramen for my live hits, starting on Thursday for RDS. I'll be on air, I'd say 3 to 4 times, every day. Doing some live reports and, you know, what's going on the course and stuff like that.
Well, we did reach out to Duffy to see if he was available this week, but I think he was just too devastated that he wasn't going to be in Augusta, so he just didn't answer my text. That's what I'm going to assume, that he just didn't just big shot me. Well, let's talk about the differences in the golf course. You said you were there in November. It is apparently much harder of a golf course now, back in its usual slot in the second weekend of April. What are your thoughts on the golf course, the conditions, and what type of player is going to come out on top with these conditions compared to November?
Well, in November, it was the what I call the summer grass. It was Bermuda grass, great condition. But now we have the winter grass, which is an overseed. They overseed the course in late November, December, with more of a northern grass. And the course right now, the course is brick hard. The greens are not receptive at all, like it was in November. So we're going to need long hitters. We're going to need guys who can hit the ball up in the air. You know, especially on those longer par fours. And the other change is there's still no, there's no grandstands or anything like that, but the ropes are back. They didn't have ropes in November because there was some patrons, but it was basically just members. So they painted lines on the ground, and with the rain showers that we had in November earlier in the week, the outside lines, if you want, was really muddy and all that. So you couldn't see the lines. You were always at the wrong spot. You know, like marshals, they were always telling you that you're too close or you're not in the right area, but you couldn't see where you were going. And so right now the ropes are back, so that's much easier to know where you're supposed to stand, where you're not supposed to stand. But the course is just absolutely breathtaking. I've seen it before in this condition. Like I said earlier, I was here in 2016, but it was totally different in November compared to now. I would bet basically anything that there's no chance that 20 under wins this 2021 Masters.
So, I mean, to give us a little bit of a comparison, obviously, you, as you said, you caddied in the three other majors, but you also played in the U.S. Open as well. How would the greens compare to what somebody might see or expect at, say, like a U.S. Open? Are they that firm?
Yes, they are that firm. No one's backing it up. Chip shots need to be played very, you need to think your way around the course because the ball just bounces and rolls like a putt. As of in 2020, in last November, guys were just throwing darts. Like we saw guys land 4 and 5 and 3 irons and the ball would just plug on the greens. They were still fast in November, but not like this. And you can see it just with the coloration. When you're close to the greens, you can see the brown dying, not dying, but like drier spots. And it's going to be quite the test. And by talking to the guys, like I've been here, I arrived in Augusta on Saturday. So I had a chance to go to the course on Sunday, yesterday, and today. And I've spoke to, you know, all the guys I know, Justin Thomas, spent some time with him yesterday. And, yeah, it's really hard. There is a chance of rain later this week, but, as of now, it's extremely firm.
Yeah. Which means high ball hitters are going to have a huge advantage. And Justin Thomas being one of those guys that can just launch it to the moon. How's he feeling going into the week?
He's feeling good. I mean, he's been playing well lately. You know, he did mention in his press conference that last week he paid a couple visits to Tiger out in Jupiter. So I'm sure they had good talks about how to go around Augusta National and stuff like that. And, you know, he is Justin Thomas. He's one of the best in the world. And it's just for him, it's just to remain. He's a pretty fiery guy. And it's just for him to calm down. Just put his ball in play and just know that his game is good enough to win. And, you know, he was up there, up the leaderboard last November, the one that DJ won. But he's actually my pick for this week. Justin Thomas would be my not only that I know him personally, but I think he's a great golfer, too. And he's a great guy. So
now you you mentioned guys that can be a little fiery. Rory McIlroy coming in this week, gets a little fiery around this golf course. He had some comments today about visiting Tiger as well, similar to Justin Thomas, and how he asked him, he saw all his 15 majors and he asked him where the rest of the trophies were. And Tiger said, "I don't know," which he obviously does know, but he's playing into it. As a player that's been out there and everything, and now you're part of the media side, the media's blowing it up. But as a player, what do you think he actually meant by that? It's not that the PGA Tour events don't matter, but he's clearly at this point in his career focused on, you know, winning the big ones. And this is the one that has eluded him up to this point.
Well, Rory, I think the biggest problem with him has been the start of his tournaments. Like, he's often starting with like a 75 or 76. And that's just a sign of a guy who's trying too hard. You know, when you try too hard, you hold the club tighter. And then it's like, he did that at the PGA Championship. He did that last year at the Masters also. It's just once he's like out of it, then he just relaxes and just plays great golf. And then, you know, how many backdoor top tens or top five has he had in the last few years just because that first round just throws him out? And, you know, but he's a pretty chill guy. He's the nicest guy in the world for having spent a bit of time with him, especially in Europe when I caddied for Russell Knox. We got to play a little bit with Rory, and I mean, he's just the nicest guy in the world. But he is fiery, like he is, and he wants this one so bad that he's gonna have to find a way to put things in perspective and just go about his business a little bit like Justin Thomas, and just play his game and see where the chip falls at the end of the week, because he's definitely good enough. He's got the perfect ball flight for this place. I mean, a high draw, kind of like Corey Connors. I mean, Corey Connors, that's all he hits, just a tight, tight, high draw. And, you know, I think Connors is going to be really good too this week.
Yeah, I wanted to get to that. Obviously, the practice round today for the Canadians, playing together, the three that are playing the tournament, Mackenzie Hughes, Corey Connors, and Mike Weir. Let's take care of Mike Weir first before we get to the younger lads. What did you see about from Mike today? Because obviously, you know, he played well last year, you know, made the cut. He's won this before, but, you know, where's his game at, and what's your assessment of what he was doing today?
He looked terrific. He looks in a great place mentally. I think in his private life, everything's going well. He's fun to be around. He's talkative. And he's been playing some great golf out on the senior tour. So when you're playing good golf, it doesn't matter where you're playing. You know, success breeds success. And he was very jovial. He was talking with the guys, explaining them, you know. And he was helpful with where to put the cups and all that. And then, you know, we think about Corey Connors. He's got Danny Saul now on the bag, you know, a good Canadian friend of mine from Alberta. And Danny's got a lot of experience at the Masters. He's caddied for Weir. He's caddied for Vijay Singh the last few years at the Masters. So that's a great guy to have on the bag. He knows exactly what to do around this place. And then you have Mike, you throw in Mike Weir also for a practice round. And then so Weir looks in a great, great spot. I know that's the one we were starting with. You know, does he have the length? Does he have the high enough ball flight to contend? But he can definitely make the cut and make a great check.
I was going to say, do these conditions actually help somebody like Mike Weir, where maybe you don't need to focus so much on the long game because you're going to get more roll than you're used to, and it's more the short game, the wedges, and some putting that could, you know, I have a feeling guys like Brian Gay or Zach Johnson, they might be in the mix this week if it's that hard out there.
Well, to me, it's just, it's, yeah, they wedged a ball. Like Brian Gay, Zach Johnson's are great wedge players. It's just with their lower ball flight, when they have a 5 and a 4 iron, then you have to hit the right part of the green. And that's where a guy like DJ or Justin Thomas or Tiger in his A day could just, you can't compete when the best player in the world has 3 clubs less than you have, especially when you're landing on a firm pool table. You just can't hit it close. And then when you're 50 feet away on these greens, you're looking at 2-putt at best.
Yeah. What about Mac? How's he looking out there? Obviously, his first Masters in about 4 years, last time he played, and only time he played there was in 2017.
Yeah.
What's his game like? How's he feeling going into his return back to Augusta?
Fantastic. His game looks great. His Mac's probably one of the best putters I've ever played with. And I'd say he's got one of the best overall short game that I've ever seen. So that's already an advantage for him. But now his ball striking is much superior than when I played with him when we were back on the Canadian tour. And I remember it was last year we spent some time on the range together. I wasn't helping him with his game by any means, but I was on the range with him at the Honda Classic, and I watched him hit on Wednesday. He was preparing for the event where he finished second, and it looked just like what it's looking like this week, just a high towering straight ball. And his family's here. He's relaxed. He's having a great time. He's enjoying this. And I asked him for a water bottle. To me, he gave me one of the worst tosses I've ever seen today. It was awful. For a guy who's got a bad arm, I had to bend over. I mean, he threw out my shoelaces. It was pitiful. So we had
they're used to the catching, right? You're the thrower. You know, us caddies, we got to be used to the throwing, and then you got to go wipe off their hands after because it's
so wet. There was a couple patrons behind me, and he did throw it from like 20 yards or 30 yards. There was some people behind me, so I guess he was afraid to overthrow it and nail somebody.
That's what they'll say.
So yeah, exactly. It was just a terrible toss, but his game looks great. I think he can be, and it's an important week for him, like kind of what Corey Connors did last year, you know, a little T12 or better gets you an invite for the following year. I mean, that's a great, I think he can do it.
All right. One last thing about around Augusta National. Now that you've probably seen the video that's going viral of Bryson DeChambeau just ripping drivers with Vijay standing beside him, just laughing. What's the talk around the golf course around that video? I know players talk. You probably were standing nearby seeing the whole thing. What's the talk about Bryson been so far?
I think there was a bigger talk about Bryson at last year's Masters. You know, because he was coming off his win at the U.S. Open and coming in quite hot. He almost decapitated me on 13, the first round. I was just right of the fairway, and he blew his ball. I mean, he almost took my head off in the right tree. Again, I wasn't standing where I was supposed to stand because you couldn't see the lines on the ground because it was so muddy on the outside of the fairways. And then he went about pole hooking a 7 iron in the flowers left, making double. And then he lost the ball on the par 4 third, a ball that plugged in the rough, like it should have been found. And then the marshal obviously finds the ball, and then he comes on on the next tee and, hey, is this your ball? I mean, he wanted to chew him out. It was just beautiful. But then we come back to this year. I think he's learned about you're not going to hear Bryson DeChambeau saying that it is a par 67 for him, like he said in last November. I think he's learned a lot, a little lesson. And especially, it's such a different golf course right now. It's not, you know, you're not going to get away with bad shots with how firm the course is right now. So he's going to have to find a way to hit it in play. Not that he doesn't, but there's so many turns on this course that you just can't bomb at 340 straight, you know, like 18 turns, two turns, five turns, you know, there's a bunch of nine turns, 10 turns. So you have to hit the ball with the correct flight and the correct distance. So it will be interesting to see his strategy this week. But I think he he's learned a lot, that it's not a golf course that he's going to be a contender trying to hit it 400 yards. It just doesn't call for this.
With that all said, I mean, obviously you're talking about the difficulty of the golf course and how much different it is from when, you know, DJ shot 20 under. What are you thinking or what are you predicting maybe the winning score might be this week?
I'd say more around the 12 mark, 10 to 12. I don't think the wind is predicted to be very high. There is some rain showers for Friday and Saturday. But I mean, it's been, yesterday was firmer than today. Mackenzie Hughes told me that they actually dialed it down a little bit today. So they must have watered the course a little bit last night. But it's extremely firm. So even if it rains a little bit, they have that sub-air system that they can crank it up, which I was surprised in November that they didn't do that, but obviously it wasn't the same grass. So I don't know. I'm not an expert in agronomy or anything like that, but it will be. I'd say around the 10 to 12 under par. If it stays the way it is right now, that would be some great shooting.
So you heard it here first, folks. Justin Thomas, 10 to 12 under par. Make your bank from Johan. Before we get going, we talked a lot about the Masters, but you know, I think we should dive into your career a little bit, and we'll obviously have you back on to do a full dive. But I'm always curious for the gentleman like yourself, where, you know, longtime player joining the caddy world and then hop out of it. What mm-hmm. led to the change of going from, you know, doing the professional caddying stuff into, you know, being a PGA professional and now media, and what would it take for you to ever go back?
I played professionally from 2008 or 7-ish to 2014. I had status on now the Korn Ferry Tour, but I was struggling really badly with bulging discs in the lower back, and so because I wasn't having great results, I wasn't very competitive. I lost, you know, my status just kept deteriorating. And then I had caddied in the past. I had caddied for Adam Hadwin and Russell Knox just as an emergency replacement. And that's when Mark Hubbard, who's a close friend of mine, Mark was fighting to get his card in 2014. And he saw that, you know, I wasn't enjoying the game, and I had to fly cross country because that year the schedule was ridiculous. It was out west, out east to do Monday qualifiers. And so Mark, I had caddied for Mark a week in Raleigh, North Carolina, when I missed the Monday qualifier, and played or caddied for Mark, and he had a great week. And it was kind of his first time with someone who had some sort of experience caddying on the bag, because Mark would just get a local every week. So in July of 2014, Mark asked me to formally become his caddy, which I accepted because it was a better deal financially for me and all that. I was never someone that had a big amount of sponsorship. And it seems to be the case for most French Canadians from Quebec. It seems the case like that. So Mark went on to get his PG Tour card. So I caddied for Mark from 2014 all the way to 2018. And then at the end of 2018, Mark lost his PGA Tour card, and we went to the Webb playoffs, and Mark didn't retain his PGA Tour card. And you know, to be a Korn Ferry Tour caddy full-time, I mean, you cannot support yourself. You just don't make enough with all the traveling and all that. And Mark and I had a heart-to-heart conversation at the end of the year, because we're so close, as you guys have seen in my videos and all that. Mark and I are extremely close, and I'm proud to say that I'm a grandpa now, because he just had his daughter a few weeks ago. And yep, since he's my first, I call him my firstborn, because the stuff that guy put me through, and there's stories everywhere about Mark and I. So I'm so happy for Mark and Megan. So coming back, we had a heart-to-heart discussion, and Mark, I was honest that I was struggling financially, and Mark was very honest and very candid with me, saying that knowing that I was struggling, it was like a double amount of pressure on him, because not only he was struggling, but I was struggling too. And then RDS had asked me in the past to help them out. And so what happened is they were looking for someone, for an analyst for the Torrey Pines event. So they flew me from the United States to Montreal, and then I got in the studio. Never did an audition, never did anything like that. I did do some work with the Golf Channel and some, you know, Michael Collins from ESPN Radio and all that. I did do some media work, but never live TV. And so they took a big gamble. They just put me in the chair. They put the helmet like you have on, and they said, the green button is if you want to talk to the producer, the red button is if you choke. And they said, the way you go. And Torrey Pines obviously is where I played the U.S. Open in 08. So it's a court, and I've caddied there numerous times. So I knew exactly what I was doing. And then I was a little shy at the beginning. And then, I was with my co-anchor was just the ultimate. It wasn't Michelle, who's usually there. It was another guy named Alain, who usually does baseball. But he's just the ultimate professional. And he put me at ease. And then I started telling stories. I started talking about the course. And then they kept being in my ear, like, talk more. And then that's exactly what happened. And then it went from one event to another event to then they wanted me for all four majors. In 2019, which my first major was just on the Golf Channel. Now the Tiger Woods Masters victory, which, I mean, how fitting or how great of a first broadcasting major can that be? I mean, it was just absolutely amazing. And then after that, I did all the other three, and then did the 2020 also, all the majors. And so this year, I did the Honda, I did the TPC Sawgrass one, the Players, and then I'll do all the majors, and I believe I will do maybe some playoffs and the Ryder Cup and that's before I come back. And then I also have my new role as the golf professional at Le Mirage. So I'm very excited for that, teaching, playing with the members, and I will tee it up, I'd say, in maybe a handful of events of the Quebec PGA National Championships of the PGA of Canada, the ones that I can play. If there is national championships, I'd love to tee it up in those, and maybe a couple other events. But then I did play a few times when I had time, because I teach a lot in Florida also. So I did play sporadically now and then. But I mean, the game is still pretty good, and I enjoy it. I really enjoy playing competitive golf, and so that's kind of what my summer is going to look like.
Yeah, full circle. It's funny you mentioned Mark Hubbard. Our good buddy Kyle Peters is now caddying for him, and mentioned Corey Connors.
He had his vaccine the week of Honda, and same thing for him. He couldn't even lift his arm, so he didn't even go.
He's
double
a baby
strap
though.
That week.
He's soft though.
Yeah. He's soft.
Funny story about him. He went to so that week of the Honda, Kyle went, because Kyle's a huge hockey fan, even though he lives in Charleston.
Can't skate though.
he's got all the gear though. Don't worry, he's been on here a few times.
Exactly, and he went, and he explained that to me. Supposedly, every arena they have like a used store, so you can buy used equipment from the pros. And he was so ecstatic. He couldn't wait for the weeks off because he bought himself, I don't know whose skates he bought, but they're used skates.
He just bought Keith Yandel's skates. I was texting him last week. He was at a Florida Panthers game. Yeah. Keith Yandel's skates.
Exactly,
yeah.
That's exactly it.
He was asking me if it was a good price. Yeah. And he just got his second vaccination and he's down. He's visiting Key West. He said he turned off his cell phone for the first time for a full week. And he's off the clock. Said, if you need to find me, you better, learn Morse code or something like that.
He's a cool guy. And then obviously he's heard about Mark and I's relationship. So we did text each other back and forth sometimes. And Mark hasn't put Kyle through too much stuff so far. He hasn't been the Hubbard that I had to deal with. So Kyle hasn't had to babysit yet, but I'm sure it's coming.
It always does. Well, we need to get you back on. We could go on for another hour with you, Johan. Yeah. We really appreciate all your master's insight. I know we have a long day. Your arm's a little sore. We need to get some ice on that and maybe a glass of wine to settle you down a little bit. But we really appreciate you coming on and giving us all the master's breakdown of the golf course, what you expect, and a quick dive into your career. And next time we'll do a deeper dive and check in on where you are at that point in the summer and hopefully get around in this summer at some point in Quebec.
That'd be great. Yeah, come visit Le Mirage. It's not too far from Kingston. How far are you guys from Smuggler's Glen?
I'm about 20 minutes, so.
You are?
You want to meet there? Yeah.
Come on down.
I might know the owners.
I love that golf course. We played a Canadian Tour event
2012.
There.
Eugene Wong won it.
Exactly. There's actually a YouTube video of me, David Burney, and Joel Darman. We were all paired together one day.
Yep.
And we didn't even know we were being filmed. And we
I could
were
tell.
Did you guys see the video?
Yeah, we know David Byrne. We know David Byrne quite well. As he's a character on this podcast.
I caddied that week for Oliver Tubbs. So
you did?
Yeah.
Last time I saw Oliver, Oliver and I and Wes Heffernan. We're playing together in the Assistance Championship, the CPGA, the PGA of Canada, up at TPC Toronto. Wes won, and I think I finished second, and Tubby finished third.
Yeah.
But it was so much fun to play with those two guys because we go back. It's just like Danny Saul and I. Like every time I see him, I might see him four or five times a year, but we have so many stories. Every time I see Derek Gillespie, it's the same thing. It's just those guys are just amazing. I mean, we need to do a Can Tour reunion.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Actually, hey, you can do it at Smugglers. Get everybody together there. Awesome.
We got some moderators right here for you.
100%. So get Eugene to come back there, and he can relive his win and the whole deal.
Do you walk when you play that course? We had to walk, and it was atrocious.
I have, and it's brutal. I caddied that
first hole.
Yeah, I caddied at Hamilton, and that was a tough caddy, but Hamilton's I think tough. Smugglers would be worse to loop.
It was a tough loop. It was a tough loop that week, and we had that big storm that week too. So
correct. Yeah. My dad almost died that week. He caddied for me all four rounds.
Martyr.
I almost killed the old man that week.
Well, we can get into much more going forward the next time we get you on. Johan, we really appreciate it. Enjoy the Masters. Hopefully another amazing week happens. Seems you have quite a track record there. Tiger Woods, Dustin Johnson. Who knows what happens this week in 2021. Thank you so much.
You guys are welcome anytime.
Thank you, Johan, for that insight. Got to say, he sounds excited for the Masters, you could say. And nice to hear his insight from a caddy perspective as well, all those years out there doing some loops on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, being a well-rounded guy involved with golf, he certainly has a great perspective. And as he says, it's, as we're hearing from him, it's going to be a great week. And we know that as well, and that just confirms it.
Why don't we get into some storylines for the Masters? You know, I think we hinted at the top of the show the idea of, you know, storyline you want to happen that's realistic and the most unrealistic storyline you want to happen. So let's start with the realistic one. You know, what do you want to speak, you know, next week when we're sitting here, what do you want to be talking about if you could just, you could draw it up right now?
Ooh, let me think about that one. I mean, realistically, I mean, as far as the storyline that you would love to see would probably, you know, we'll go back to exactly what we talked about in November. It would be Rory capping the Grand Slam. I mean, is it going to happen? Debatable. Could it happen? Certainly. You know, he seems refreshed, you know, working away with Pete Cowan. I think that is the storybook. I think that's the storybook that you probably have more odds of happening rather than some unknown player making something happen. So what do you think?
Yeah, that was the one I was thinking of off the top. I think it's so tough. Every year we do this, and I think he said it, like, I put too much pressure on myself every time we get here, and yeah. It's been quieter this time around. I think it's because the Masters just happened. I think it just allowed us to almost, we're back. Like, we haven't had that lull of, you know, no tournaments, no big tournaments. Like, we've talked about it week over week. Everything's been good. Each tournament's just been great. It's been good entertainment, so it helps. So since you took that one, the one that I want to happen, I guess, is I'm going to go Corey Connors picking up the win. Game is set for Augusta. I think he's a top 10 year in, year out. I think he's got two of them so far in his two starts. Why not? He's got the game for it. If the putter gets hot, you know, he's going to hit it tee to green just as good, if not better, than anyone else. Why not? Why can't it be Corey and get that Canadian flair out there, second Canadian to win the Masters? And maybe Mike Weir makes the cut again and, you know, turns back the clock and isn't just grinding to make the cut. He's just out there. Maybe you top 20. I'm going to throw a top 20 out for Mike Weir as well, just for fun there. So that's my realistic ones. The second one there might not be that realistic. What's your most unrealistic story that you wish, like, hey, if this happens, we're going to have content forever to talk about it?
I think the unrealistic one would be one of the three amateurs winning. There's a guy in there. Ollie Osborne is his name. And I think Ollie Osborne wins the Masters, I think we would be memed to death on social media.
Why is that?
Ollie Osborne, we'd see Ozzy Osborne, you know, affiliations all over the place. We'd see a million different references that way. You know, what's cool about this guy though, is that, you know, he it's an amateur. So, I mean, you know, it just doesn't happen. We've only got three of them that are in there. It's tough for them to contend. So I would probably say that's, you know, short of the senior guys or whatever doing something, I would say that's the most unrealistic one that could create a lot of discussion and a lot of content. What about you?
Yeah, I there's so many. Bernhard Langer played really well the last time around. Why can't he be in the mix? I think that here's my unrealistic one. A final pairing of Bernhard Langer and Freddie Couples.
Like, that would be amazing.
Be
amazing.
Yeah. They don't have to win.
The current generation wouldn't really get it.
No.
You know?
But I just think it's unrealistic to have it. I think it would be great. Freddie is just, they were joking about him on the Masters on the Range today. They were watching Bryson just smash golf balls, and he said, I think Bryson just hit more golf balls right there than Freddie hit in the hour he was on the range, because that's always been his MO, right? He just kind of walks and talks and hits three and, all right, let's go to the tee, let's go. And I love watching Freddie swing, so the more he's on TV, the better. But that's my unrealistic one.
And I love the fact too that Freddie, I mean, they ask him while he keeps playing, he's like, well, they keep letting me. So I mean, why not?
Yeah, Larry Mize still out there, and he's wonder, do you think he's gonna wear his overalls again, or is his you know, whatever he was rocking, his suspenders he was rocking last time. That's peak old man right there.
Wasn't it Sandy? I think it was Sandy Lyle that had the suspenders.
Is that what I said?
I said Larry Mize. Doesn't matter. I mean,
same old fart.
I guess, you know, Larry Mize being an Augustan native, you know, maybe that's another cool stuff. I mean, here's the thing. You know, the first couple of days, there's always going to be something unusual
always
happening.
Mix,
yeah. Yeah, Charlie Hoffman's not around, so it's not going to be him. But, yeah, you zip a senior in there. As you said, Langer, he ended up T29 in November there. But, you know, he's such a competitor. And as we said, the golf ball doesn't know, you know, what age he is. The other one that might be interesting though would be, you know, the old dad bump with John Rahm. You know,
I think he's missing the cut. That's a bold.
I'm not saying he's gonna win, but if he can even get in the mix, I mean, we're recording this on Tuesday, he's not even coming into today. You know, is it kind of the Willett situation? You know, you go in there, you play some zombie golf, you know, you go in there, you're so tired, you just don't even think about it. Who knows?
Yeah, I think the other one too is Phil, an unrealistic. I think this is the one he's going to win if he wins another tournament even.
Yeah.
Like it's crazy to think it is a major, but like if Phil's going to pick up a win, I think it's going to be at Augusta. It favors everybody, right? And it favors the short game. And if the putter gets going, you know, he knows his way around three green jackets. Why not a fourth? It's unrealistic. I don't think it's going to happen. But if you're asking me for one I would like to happen, I think that's a really feel good story that gets you weeks of content.
Yeah, I think it's going to be different this year just based on the conditions as well. I mean, we're hearing that the golf course is very firm. It's running very fast. So I think that brings more players into the mix. It may challenge certain players, especially around the greens as far as short game and stuff. So that might play into a guy like Phil's hands. But these greens are so tough to figure out. And, you know, we were talking about the caddies and their insight or whatever. You know, they're not allowed to use levels and stuff like that when they do their practice rounds. So it's different than other tournaments. There's no greens book. You know, they have a lot less references that way. So experience certainly pays off for the players. And, you know, conditions will definitely determine a lot of, you know, who can be in the mix here.
I agree. What about DJ? What are your thoughts about DJ coming into this week? Obviously, didn't have a great showing at the match play. Was in Valero, quickly pulled out. Must have found what he was looking for at home. Got the rest. You know, is a repeat happening?
You know what? I don't think you can count him out because, you know, a guy that went 20 under here in November and obviously was able to get around that golf course, I think, with only four bogeys. I get it. It was a different time, a different conditions. Yeah. I mean, that alone tells you he obviously has the skills and ability to take it to anywheres. And the fact now that he has actually won it, it also takes off a little bit of pressure as well. And just like when Phil won his for the first time, I mean, it was a free-for-all after that because, you know, you've done it once, you know, you can do it. You're not doubting yourself in any way. So would I be surprised to see DJ win? No, not one bit, especially in the manner that he did it. I mean, you know, going 20 under par at Augusta and basically, you know, he won by five. I mean, the only competition is the golf course. And he obviously, you know, he tackled the golf course and you know, everybody else was basically left in his dust.
Yep. I think he'll be in the mix. He's got to be in the mix. I don't know how he isn't. He's DJ. But who's somebody that's in the field that you're like, you know, they're not going to be in the mix. You're just even shocked to see them in the field in the first place. I'm going through some lists and there's some names in here, you know, like Robert Streb. I was like, huh? How? Yeah. How'd you get in here? I forgot he won that random tournament.
Yeah. You're wondering how they get in there, but I mean, yeah, you're right. You start to look through it. Michael Thompson, there's a great example.
He won a random one.
Yeah, he won a 3M or whatever, and you know, he and Hudson Swafford are playing together. Yeah. And I mean, the spectators are probably, you know, the biggest question for the 20% of the fans that are allowed in there will be who's that when they tee off. They'll be trying to figure it out of who it is. And no offense, obviously they're great players and they're fine players, and you know, we shouldn't always be thinking that just the superstars are going to dominate. But yeah, if you sit there and look, you know, a guy like Michael Thompson would certainly be one where I'd be going, huh, all right. Yeah, you may as well just throw him out right now.
Yeah. I'm going through this list and there's some names in here that could be sneaky top 10, top 20 finishes. Like Brian Gay might Zach Johnson this golf course.
Especially the conditions the way they
are. That's what I mean. If it's firm out there, you know, this guy putts, you know, you could say better than almost anybody out there. He hasn't been there since 2013. His best finish was in 2013, where he finished T38. He's obviously happy to be back. He is 49, you know, but this is the last shot, I think, to do it. You know, a sneaky top 10, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a major where he could do it, just like Phil, I mean, this is would be something that plays in his hands. He's not going to, you know, it's going to be pretty rare that he's going to contend in a golf course like that hosts the PGA that's super long, say Kiawa this year, a U.S. Open or anything like that. So his major skill set is his ability to putt. And if he can make, you know, take advantage of that, yeah, he could gain a lot of strokes and a lot of people.
Lanto Griffin also in the field. 4 years ago, Lanto Griffin called his agent and quit golf.
Isn't that crazy?
And he's at the Masters. It's crazy.
But that's the great part about the game, right?
Yeah. Victor Perez. I wonder how much we'll talk about his height this week.
too much. We'll probably see comparisons. We'll probably see a graphic of him walking down 10, and they'll be comparing it to the elevation. They'll show his height relative and how many Victor Perez's you can fit from the 10th tee box down to the 10th fairway or something like that.
You asked me earlier, you know, underrated groups to watch. The most underrated one, I think, that if they had it fully mic'd up and everything's going to be good, because I believe you're going to be able to see every shot, as per last time, Billy Horschel, Tyrrell Hatton, and Ryan Palmer. All three of these guys run hot.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're all together, that's a group that I think will be very entertaining to watch. Is there a group that for you where you're like, yeah, they're not going to be a feature group by any means, but I'm looking forward to watching them?
Well, you know what? I wouldn't shy away. I mean, short of Christian Bezuntu, I can't even pronounce it or whatever. But, you know, Sergio and Simpson there, I think those two could get some things going and kind of be a couple of guys that, you know, obviously Sergio's won it before, but kind of sneak up there. And, you know, they're not going to get as much attention because they're in between, you know, Bubba, Koepka, and Hovland on one side of them, and then DJ and Westwood are on the other side of them. So probably not going to see much as far as broadcast media, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them putting up some numbers.
No, that's for sure. Well, why don't we get to our draft that we do every single time? We're going to pick three players and then a fourth that has 101 odds or worst. And then whoever makes the most money of those four, the other person, as per usual, is a bottle of wine. I delivered on my bottle of wine when I went to the golf cave. I was able to go see Scott's garage in the flesh. Looks good, feels good in there. My end of the bargain was brought, and there wasn't a return bottle, but it's okay. It's fine.
I wasn't ready for it.
You know what? Maybe if I win this, I can combine the two, and we can get an even nicer one. Real high end, you know, start bundling it. all right. I'll let you go with the first pick since I won, I believe, the last time we've done this. So hit it, Scotty.
All right, I'm going to go with JT. One of the players putting extremely well, high as far as his confidence levels. You know, he's in at 12-1 right now, and you know, I like his odds not only to you know, to win, but if he doesn't win, to kind of be in the mix there. So you know, he's going to be a popular pick this week among others, but JT will be my number one guy off the top.
I mean, if you're going with JT, I'll go with DJ. I think, you know, how do you not pick the reigning champ? He's going to be top 10. Like, you probably, like, for him to be top 10, you're probably actually not even making your money back, like, in terms getting even money. I don't even know the numbers on it right now. I could try to look it up quickly, but that's just how good this guy's been. Let's just see here really quick. Yeah, you're not. Top 10. 1.83-1. That is insane. That is insane. So I'll take DJ first, though, with my first pick. Who's your second pick?
Second pick for me, which will make some of my friends down under really happy, is Cam Smith. You know, we've talked a lot about this guy. Tied for second in November. It was in the mix, going at about 40-1 in most places. I think there's a lot of value in that.
I agree.
And, you know, there's a lot to be said for how he played there. And certainly, obviously, DJ stood out. Otherwise, he would have been in a playoff. It doesn't work that way. But having that experience and being in the mix and knowing how to play this golf course, I think, especially given the fact that we're back so soon, right? Mm-hmm. If it was a year later, I probably wouldn't put as much value in that appearance in November and how he played. But knowing that you were there in November, How many tournaments maybe has he played by now? Not really that many. But so it's fresh in his mind as far as how he played the golf course, things that he wants to do better to, you know, nudge up that placing and nudge up that mark. So I think there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah, I'm going to get my heart broken again, and this is a story I think we're all looking for, but Rory McIlroy, I got to go with it. It's got to happen. It's got to happen eventually.
We say that every time. I mean, during this podcast, I think this is 1, 2, 3. So this is our 4th Masters that we've covered in the podcast. So we keep saying it every time, and eventually it's got to be closer to the truth, doesn't it?
It's going to happen. It's got to happen. I'm going to take Rory. Who's your next guy?
Given the fact, the way the golf course is this week, and again, you know, we talked about Lee Westwood and his attitude of how he's playing. I think another player that has a carefree type of attitude and has a different approach now because he's got the age to give him some wisdom, going to have a golf course that's a little firmer, even though he does hit the ball a decent way as it is. Your boy, Paul Casey. I think he's a guy who will definitely be under the radar this week, which, you know, he probably shouldn't be, but he's generally played okay here. And I think this might be time for him to shine.
People are probably yelling at their phone or whatever, the fact that, you know, we still have guys like Bryson DeChambeau and Jordan Spieth sitting around.
Yeah, I know.
You know, John Rahm, guys like that. So yeah. I hate myself for doing it, but I'll take Bryson. I'll take him. I think I think what he needs to do is shut his mouth this week. And I mean, and that will
bump him up from his T34 that he had in November.
Yeah. Remember, that's a T34 on a par 68 course. Remember, it's a par 68. Exactly. Or what did so he say? 67. I forget.
Yeah. 67. So yeah, par 67. He was a lot over. Yeah.
So yeah, just what hole of the par fours is he thinking is now a par three in his eyes? Is it
probably three.
And that's the one that he made a billion on and his ball plugged.
Exactly.
For it, that, it's just, this is the, I already hate the pick. This is what I hate about the guy. How many twos in Masters history have even been made on three? Has there been one?
I don't think there's, well, I'll have a look, but I don't think there's been many that were made with a putt.
Well, yeah, that's fair. That's what I mean. Like it's such a ridiculous statement. I get it with all the par fives. Yes, he should, with his length, there isn't one that he shouldn't easily be on in two. 100%. But to go to a drivable par four that is drivable in the sense it's 350, 360 at times. Yeah. They can move it up and down a little bit. It's just such a ludicrous statement. So I'll let you say it's a par 68. You better show it if that's the case. I want to be seeing at least some 5-under numbers. So yeah, I already hate the pick, but I'm taking them.
All right.
All right.
Good.
Who's your 100-1 or
my
worse?
100-1 or worse. This is hard. I mean, there's so many that are in there, but I'm going to take one that's a little bit unusual in just the fact that, again, this is a guy who can putt, knows how to get around a golf course. Brian Harman.
Oh, I thought you were going to Brian Gay.
A little lefty. No, wow. Brian Harman. You know, obviously he's shown some form of late, played decent at the match play. I think if the golf course stays as it is, I think that puts him in a situation that, you know, his length doesn't hurt him quite as much. And I think he'll have an impact.
I like it.
What about you?
I got to go back to, I said off the top, this guy, he goes to Augusta and he plays great. He's got a guy did Danny win as a caddy at Augusta? I don't know, but I'm going Corey Connors.
Yeah, he wasn't with VJ at that point.
Yeah, so I'm going Corey Connors. I don't know how I can't. As I said, I really like the Brian Gay play, and I do not like Brian Gay. I've said this on this podcast many times. The guy is a dick, but can he putt? He can putt.
But I'm actually kind of shocked at Corey's odds, given the fact that he tied for 10th November. Sense. So, I mean, I get it. A lot of it's directed by betting volume more than anything. Yep. And as a result of it, you're right, he's probably one of the best values that is out there.
Yeah, Kisner out there, Kevin Na, like the tournament conditions for those guys, that's right up their alley. You know, guys that just kind of need to hit it down the middle and they're gonna out putt you probably. Danny Willett has been hot and he's at 300-1. I'm sure you can get some good top 10 numbers there. Zach Johnson, right? Like the guy's won there before. This is the type of setup for him. What were you gonna say though?
I was going to say, you know what? what do you think of Justin Rose's odds at this event, given he has not been doing a lot, but all of a sudden the last couple of weeks, he's been doing a lot of practice, a lot of work in with Foley, doing a lot of things. Do you think he'll actually make an impact this week?
I don't know. It's the back, right? That's the thing. That's a guy that, though, if you're not paying attention, you might not even go that deep in your odds when you're looking. Yeah. And that's a guy that could easily win. Right. Yeah. Like if he had been playing, his back hadn't hurt or anything along those lines, you know, I believe he was in a good grouping come Saturday. Was it Saturday at the Players when he withdrew? Either way, like he's one of the best players.
He's a quality player.
Yeah. Right. Like usually when you look at major championships, his name is with the Dustin Johnsons, the Jordan Spieths. He's right up there, even though he has only won that one U.S. Open, right? So, yeah, 125, throw a little top 20 in on him. Why not?
Yeah, and I've got another one for you. The Reed factor. I mean, you know, we haven't really talked about him at all.
We made it this long without talking about him.
I know, but, you know, he's got a jacket already. Yep. So it's like, is he going to be in the mix? I mean, not that we want him in the mix. He's certainly not going to be our fairy tale pick.
I think for him to be in the mix this week, the conditions need to get tough in the sense. Mm-hmm. I think the wind needs to pick up. It's going to need some rain. I just think the conditions of it being hard just brings everybody else in a little bit more. And yes, it does make it more difficult. You're going to have more chips and you're going to have to putt really well. But I think he needs like long rough and that type of condition. He needs U.S. Open type of conditions versus this, where I think everybody's a little bit more even out there. I know he's played in the area, knows the golf course very well. I love that he hasn't been on TV and they haven't talked about it, but you know what? That probably pisses him off. He'll probably come out swinging.
Yeah. I mean, we're certainly probably going to see a little bit more compressed as far as the scoring, which is great. I mean, especially when it comes down to Sunday, if we end up with a lot of players that are mixed back and forth, I mean, it's sort of what we want. I mean, I guess that was one of the things that I wouldn't say critical of, but was disappointing in one way in the fact that DJ won by five and it was going away. A lot of people were happy because DJ was winning, but it certainly didn't have the drama that, you know, Tiger winning in 2019, you know, part of the fact there was not the fact that just Tiger won. It was the fact that it was back and forth and back and forth, especially when it came to the back nine. So, you know, if it can be more that way because of the course conditions this year, I think, you know, it's great for everybody that's watching it.
I got to do some quick research here. How is Henrik Stenson in this field? This guy cannot break 80 right now.
I'm going to have to check his invite list or whatever. I mean, it's obviously because of a finish someplace or a world ranking.
I'm trying to pull it up right now. We'll have to see here how he got in here. It's 5 years from the British Open. This is his last one from the British Open. So there's why. That 2016 feels like...
legacy, yeah.
Wow. Let's hope he turns it around, but man. Henrik, you have
there's a guy. Well, I mean that's the thing. I mean, there's some players in here that, you know, are hanging on to those exemptions and how they get through, and you know, you just don't. They're not going to finish dead last, but they're not guys that you're thinking are going to be in the, you know, the top 20 come Sunday.
No. Why don't we wrap it up there for that, and we'll take a quick break, hit the mailbag, talk about what our routine is going to look like come Thursday through Sunday, and then finish it up as per usual with a tip of the week. Maybe we do a tip of the week of just the viewing of the Masters. We won't even talk about golf. Let's give a viewing tip of the week. Maybe I'll run that one, and you can go your little, you know, no, you know, you're playing tip of the week. People want that too, I guess. But I'll give you a tip of the week of watching the Masters. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come right back. All right, Scotty, I mentioned our routine for the next 4 days. What's your routine gonna look like here? Come Thursday, what I believe the first tee off is early. You know, coverage doesn't really show that early. We got 8 a.m. tee off with Michael Thompson and Hudson Swafford. When are you getting in front of the TV with probably the masters.com tracker going at the same time?
Well, for me, I mean, like you, working in front of a laptop or a computer kind of all day, I'll probably second or third screen it. So I'll have an iPad going, have that flipped open, probably keeping track of the, you know, the Canadians first off, and then, you know, see how things sort of play out. So TV won't be on as much early on. It'll be mostly through the digital channels as we kind of work away and do some things, but certainly we'll be catching the wrap ups and the highlights at nighttime and any repeats just to check some things out. But we'll say pretty intense, mostly on the weekend more than early in the week. What about you?
Yeah, I'll probably be up bright and early. That's been
don't have a choice
lately. Yeah, I mean, kid sleeps in pretty good. He got up at like 9:30 today. I woke up.
Wow.
Like, whoa, what's going on? He's a sleeper. But yeah, probably just get everything going, find, you know, the feature groups on TV, yep. Find another one on the laptop, maybe a different one on the iPad. Just get every option going, three screen it all day long. I think I'm sneaking out Friday for some golf, another maybe nine holes. Maybe try to buy into an 18. Maybe we'll see if the warden allows that long of a leave from the penitentiary. But yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it. It's one of the best. I think I wrote the best week of the year on Instagram earlier this week, but I go back and forth between that and the Open. I find the Open as a I think I'm going to tie them because there's such a different feel where you're up at like 4 a.m., right? And you got the coffee going. And there's something romantic about that. And then once the Open ends, you're on the golf course because it ends around noon or whatever, and you're able to go out. So that is one I can't wait. Now, I know we got the Masters in front of us where we should be excited, but I'm looking forward to the Open. It's been 2 years.
Yeah, I think the one thing that generally happens for me, or at least I found the last couple of years, is that when I'm watching the Masters, I tend to be a little bit more engaged in just watching it and not doing as much social media or chatting back and forth, and maybe texting with some friends or whatever and talking about things, but it won't be about posting. I mean, just for the fact that everybody's also watching. So it's nothing that you're going to present on social media that is generally going to be different than what people are going to hear anywhere else. So I would say it's a little bit more intensive that way as far as watching the screen and seeing what's going on rather than paying as much attention to social media.
I love it. So before we hit our mailbag, I have two hypotheticals here from Reed's hypothetical bag.
Uh-oh.
Before we get into the mailbag. So the first one, he says, if John Rahm's baby wasn't born and he was leading on Saturday, would he leave?
Ooh,
so the baby's the baby comes Saturday. It's his wife calls him post round. He's in the lead. Does he leave?
I think that might be a different situation depending on what his wife says, right? It would be different if she just says, you know, you should just stay. I think he would go. I think he would leave. I think he would realize and understand that, you know, he's pretty early in his career. There's a good chance that he might be in that position again at some point in his career. Whereas, you know, having a child, you know, it's not going to happen all the time. So he's got a lot more Masters to think about. I think he becomes the good guy, the emotional Spaniard, and says, forget it, I'm going. What about you?
I think so, too, in the sense of the unknown of what comes Sunday.
Right. Yes.
He hasn't won, right? And Reed didn't give us how big the stroke limit is here either, right? Like that would be, I think that is.
Sorry, Reed, you messed up.
Yeah. Like if it was like five, that's maybe he's able to pull it off, right? Hey, I'll be there, you know, first flight out. I'm not sticking around for media. I don't care what my obligation is. I won. I'm out. I got the car running. I'll see you at, you know, 7:30, right? Like, but if it's one, right, one or two, you know, he's got no advocate. He's not getting sleep, I'll tell you that.
No.
Saturday night, not only is he not getting sleep because of he's winning. Like, I remember when my wife woke me up and was like, hey, I'm going into labor here, like you might want to go sleep in the other room because I you know, I got pain, blah blah blah. Like, I didn't sleep. I was just laying in the other room like, what's gonna happen now? It's not going to go. I think he leaves because what if you do stay and then that's the only thing on your mind on the golf course? You go out and shoot 80 and then it's like, I should have just left anyway. So I think I agree with you. I actually believe he left. I believe anybody that doesn't have kids would say No, he wouldn't leave. But I'm sure there are some guys out there that do have kids that wouldn't leave too. So the last time I can think of is Hunter Mahan at the Canadian Open when he did I don't think he's won since. He was in the lead, and I don't think he ever won again. Or obviously, he can barely break 80 himself right now. But
yeah, and he's probably still pretty happy about that decision.
Oh, yeah. Hunter's got, what, $100 million in the bank?
He's doing okay.
All right, I actually got two more. The one we've played before, but we'll do it again. So this one is if you could pay to play just one hole, what hole would it be, and how much are you paying? So you only got one hole. Let's say you only get one run through it, not like two runs, just one run through it. What hole are you playing?
13 for me. Damn. You know, you're kind of looking at Amen Corner, looking at those two. I think 13 par five. Chances are you're going to hit a few more shots, which would be better than just hitting one tee shot and maybe hitting seven putts. So I think for me, it's getting up on 13, trying to hit a quality tee shot around the corner. There's not going to be a decision. I mean, that's the thing. You're going for it. Yeah. I mean, if you're only doing it one time or whatever, how much would I pay? Oh boy. I'd pony up a grand for that.
That's pretty. I think so. I'm going, I was going to go 13. I just feel like the problem with 13, if you hit a bad drive, it's got like you hit left. It's like, I ruined my whole thing. Now I got to hit another one. I do agree with you. 12 is another one where it's like, that's a really good one. You're right in the middle of Amen Corner, but, I'm going to go with 15. Ooh, I want to hit that. Five. Yeah. I know there's room for me to hit it kind of off the tee left or right a little bit. Right is, there's trees there, but you're not screwed. It's that second shot coming in that I think would be really fun. I say that as if I have the distance to actually get there on the second shot anyway, but
you'd be surprised though. I mean,
ripping it's three wood.
It's way downhill, a lot more than you think. And when I was there in 12, one of the things that happened was that we were there during a practice round and, they had opened up the pathway where you could walk across and there was enough time between the groups where we could actually stand there for a little bit and look down and look back up and actually take some time to look at it and ponder what that approach would be like. One, steeper. So obviously the ball is running down there. Terrifying as far as that downhill lie, trying to land it on that surface, especially with the water not only in front but in the back as well. So that's a good choice. I like that one too. How much though?
Oh, how much? So one play, one hole.
Yeah. With a free pimento cheese sandwich.
Yeah, my gut's saying only 500 for one hole. I think because if you actually break it down, right?
You need diaper money. I understand.
Yeah, but if you look at it, that means you're willing to pay $18,000 to play Augusta National.
not really. I mean,
well, I
think it's a better story, a more interesting story that you only played one hole. Would you like to play everything? Yeah. But I think we played that before where we talked about how much we would pay for the whole round. I don't know if I would pay that much more for the whole round. So I think it's just equivalent for me. So,
all right. And then, his last one, which I guess we'll start the mailbag off with this one. And thanks everyone for sending it in. His last one, you won the Masters. What are you serving the year after for dinner? We've played this before. Maybe our answers have changed though. So, let's go with our starters. What's our starter? I can tell you it's not pigs in a blanket. What a horrible
you're not into that one?
No.
Our starter, let me think. I would probably go with something like a few scallops or something like that. Just taken care of nicely, just kind of caramelized on the edges, not a big serving of it, but just enough. Nice, something nice and delicate, kind of get your dinner going.
All right. I'm going to go with calamari. I'm going to go with calamari to start. But it's going to be calamari. That's also, with some hot peppers in there as well. That might set you up for where the meal's going mixed together. So a little calamari to start. All right. What's your, do you have to do a salad or can you go right to the main course?
I think you just go right to a main course. I mean, they obviously have a couple of options and stuff like that. Wow. It's hard for me to think,
you got to pair it with your scallops.
I know, but it's not necessarily. I mean, you see how eclectic some of these menus are. I mean, they're all over the board as far as where they're at. And certainly I can imagine there's a bunch of people that just kind of look at it and go, eh, whatever, and, you know, get whatever else made for them. You know, it would be neat, I think, for a lot of people just to go and say, oh, I'm going to do the high end. I'll do a beautiful, you know, steak or this or that. You know, I would go with something kind of a little bit more traditional. As far as the South, I would go for something like a country fried chicken. Oh. And yeah, just something with a kind of a mill white gravy or something like that. Right. I think that kind of fits in to the theme of the area. Love that meal. You know, maybe has a little bit of heat to it as far as the, you know, the deep frying and everything that's involved there. So a little bit different probably, but what's your take?
A little mash on the side or?
Yeah, a little mash or a mac and cheese, you know, kind of give you some options.
You are killing your group. You're starting off with a nice scalp. And then by the end, these people are just arteries
dying.
Are clogged. Yeah.
Yeah, for 100%.
For my main, I think I'm going to go, I did the calamari at the start. I'm going to do like a taco bar.
Oh,
yeah, I'm going to taco bar. Yeah, so just a bunch of different tacos, meats and everything. You know, maybe some you got a guy making fresh guac right beside you.
It's an amazing image when you think about a whole bunch
that's
of
what I mean.
Guys in there with their green jackets.
Larry Mize just has salsa bar. All over his green jacket. Sandy Lyle's, you know, his suspenders are, you know, they're just covered in sour cream and... yeah, that's what I think. That's where I'm going with. And then maybe for dessert, give me like a key lime pie to ooh, wrap it all up and some cervezas out there. Oh, it'll be great. It'll be great.
Definitely have to have some beers in there. I think dessert for me, I think you got to go something a little bit traditional. Peach cobbler probably for me, you know, a little all bit right. more local. I know it's a little stereotypical. It's a little cliche as far as the state of Georgia or whatever, but, you know, peach cobbler with some vanilla ice cream, I think would just be terrific.
All right. Let's hit the rest of the mailbag. What's our second question?
All right. What do you think a 15 handicap golfer would score from the back tees at Augusta National Golf Club?
Oh, like 120 plus. Not a chance. Yeah. Like there's a couple holes that you're in the woods and you're just in the woods. And you're
I'd
want to
know how many
woods.
Putts they're going to take.
Yeah, plus the putts and the score. Chips and everything. At least 120. That might be a low end. If you're actually playing by the rules from the back tees, putting everything out.
Yeah.
Ian Poulter had this great video on his Instagram of showing what a 13 on the stimp looks like. And there's going to be some 4-footers for this 15 handicapper that they end up having 25 coming back. So,
yeah, guaranteed. I'm going to go on the 120. I'm taking the over. I really am. I mean, they're going to be so nervous as it is. They're going to duff some shots. They're going to have some terrible bunker shots. You know, they're going to scrape it around with a few of their long shots. But like you said, once they get around those greens, I mean, you know, if they shoot 120 to 130, they're probably going to have 60 shots that are around chips or putts, you know, for a 15 capper, a 215 capper, like you said, actually following the rules. Probably in that range. All right. Obviously, this guy's going to get a lot of discussion this week. We've already talked about it a little bit. Just won at the Valero Texas Open. Does Spieth win a major in 2021?
I mean, the odds are no, he doesn't. But right. I think if he does, and I'm just looking at where they are this year.
Yep.
You know, Kiawah Island, that's not bad time for him. You know, it's in
too
May.
Much time in the, too much time in the sand dunes with that driving.
Yeah, fair enough. Torrey Pines, decent. Royal St. George, you know. The problem is you're shaking your head. You never know what game this guy brings, right?
True. Yeah.
Like if he has a good driving week, he could be great. He could be great. So I don't see it happening. No, you're asking a yes, no question. I'm giving you a yes, no answer. I'll say no.
I'd say no. But if he is, it would be this week. I think this gives him the best opportunity.
Well, of course, yeah.
More than anything, based on momentum and stuff. But otherwise, no. I wouldn't. If I had to lay the bet and somebody said one way or the other, I'm going to go no. All right. Somebody says they have a bet going with a friend who will finish dead last at the Masters. There's a good one.
Yeah. Well, who finished dead last year? Let's make sure we get that out before we before we move on here. I'm pulling it up. This is great radio.
I got it. VG, WDs don't really count.
No, WDs do not count.
Amateur.
It looks like it was an amateur. And then Andrew Landry was just behind him. An amateur is an that's such an easy
pick. Let's go non-amateurs, right? Yeah. Let's stick to the pros.
Because, like, the amateur, I don't know about – I can't even find an amateur. Joe Long, I don't know what this guy kid's name game is like. So if we're going pros, do you got one off the top of your head?
I'm going to stick with the same one that finished. I'm going to go with Olathabal. He was 14 over. He was the short of Landry. He was the second highest. I think, you know, he's there ceremonially more than anything. And, you know, looking at his length and his ability to hit the golf ball, he never hit the golf ball a long way, you know, when he was playing the Masters. You know, obviously he was able to win, but I think, you know, he doesn't play much at all. So I think he'd be looking a little rusty, and I think he's your high man for this week.
Yeah, give me Suspenders Boy there. And,
getting a Sandy?
Yeah, him or Woosnam. But I'm taking Sandy.
I don't know. Woosnam got to the Waffle House this week, so I think there's good vibes in that. I think that Fair was enough. His first time going to the Waffle House. So, maybe there's a little something in that. All right, on to the next one here. How many Masters pools are you in this year?
I'm only in I think I'm only in one right now. No one invited me to any, so I'm down. Reach out. This will be out on Wednesday. If you got some going, I'm interested. But yeah, I'm just in the one this year. What about you?
Yeah, I'm not actually in any officially, believe it or not, but the number that I was offered was unbelievable. In fact, I tweeted out today that I think the total amount of buy-in for all the Masters pools I was invited into equals the Masters purse this year. There was that many, and they ranged from $10 up to $50 that I saw. I mean, there was a lot that were going on. And of course, you know, just like anything these days, as far as digital, once you start looking at them and talking about them, they're in your algorithm. So you started seeing a million different ones. Yeah. And, you know, some of the best ones I did see, though, I saw some that were for charity and supporting charity events and efforts. Those are probably the ones to be more interested in. But no, I just left myself out of it this year. All right. What is your over under on egg salad sandwiches for Bob Weeks at the Masters this time?
Did Bob send this question himself?
No, but he posts about them. That's his favorite thing.
Well,
I asked. I put a post out there that said, you know, put the Masters logo. What's this make you think of? And Bob's response right away was egg salad. And I've already seen an egg salad post from him.
Yeah. So you got to assume one a day, right? Minimum. So 7 days. So I guess it's, You got to assume at least one more day he's double down. He's taking two. So I'm going to set the line at 8.5.
I think that's fair. I'm going to take, because
it's assuming he does a double, like he does a, you know, a loop back, right? Bob's a skinny dude. I don't know if he's a feaster or not.
Lots of yogurt. I know that from being on the road and stuff with him. He certainly shamed me a few times on trips where you're all of a sudden you're going to the breakfast buffet and you're grabbing all the bacon and stuff, and you look over and there's Bob with the granola and the yogurt, and then you're like, I guess I better go get some fruit. You know what, he loves them. The price is right. I think I'm gonna go the over. I'm gonna go 10, and I will ask him that at the end of the week and see where he ends up with that.
That's awesome. Well, that's all our Masters related mailbag questions for the week. We'll take any questions that weren't Masters related this week. We'll bring them into next week for you. So thank you everyone for sending in those questions. Scott, you want to hit the tip of the week? You want me to start off with my tip of the week?
I'd love to hear your tip of the week.
All right, here's my tip of the week for Masters viewing. I already talked about it. You need at least two screens. Got the TV going. TSN will have it all in Canada. I don't know where you're going to get in the States. All five channels, I believe, throughout the week will have different feature groups and things along those lines. That's your one. That's your main screen. But then you got to get the iPad or the laptop out for your actual different feature groups. So you always have something going. You're never waiting. There's never a commercial. You always have the action going. You need something that you can eat with your hands, some nachos, some wings, something along those lines. And then I think the beer, you can crack that as early as you want. I say your rule is once a feature group is on TV, you can crack a beer. So I'm saying 9 o'clock if you want, that's good to go. But here's the key. If you are in a relationship or married, you got to do the dishes at some point. You got to make sure that you've done some sort of task. So line it up where you're like, okay, there's a gap between this feature group and this. I don't mind missing, say, hole 2 through 4 of that group. I'm going to vacuum or do the lawn or do the dishes, something quickly that, you know, you haven't been a completely useless slob all day. Take that half an hour. You'll thank me later when it comes Sunday and your wife or your husband or whoever, your partner, is just sick of looking at your mug on the couch as you haven't moved and your ass is just, there's a hole there because that's where you've been the whole time. And there's empties around you and you're covered in nacho chip dust and there's sauce all over you and you're yelling, I could have made that. You know, do yourself a favor, do your wife a favor, do your partner a favor. Just do one task a day that will make them happy. And that is my tip of the week of how to watch the Masters.
You know what? I can't top that. Let's leave it at that. I'll take my technical stuff related to how to get better at golf and I'll shove it over to next week. That's an amazing tip. Certainly appreciate it. And definitely great advice there. I think that everybody should listen to and to make sure that, you know, you're still alive by next week.
Exactly. All right, that's it for our episode. We're looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to having a nice ball. I might have to even defer it for my third one so I can maybe get into that $100 range here. I don't know, but I like my odds. Rory's, I think he's going to pull through this week. I think Rory's going to pull through.
Well, you keep that up. I'm going to have to fly to Napa and get it myself if we keep doing that. But it should be a great week. And hopefully our picks come through and, you know, everybody enjoys the Masters.
Yeah. Thank you again to Johan Benson for giving us his insight from the grounds at Augusta National. Thank you to our technical producer, Brendan Kennedy, for getting us sounding good. And thank you again to our musical guest, Ellis Meek. And you can check out his music at the end of this podcast, also on Spotify, wherever you can get your music. So check him out and support Canadian artists as, you know, the music industry is struggling. I think a lot of people aren't even aware of that. I just saw that our silly government shut down live streaming of concerts for some reason. Does not make sense. Music, you know, musicians need a way to make money somehow. And shutting that down is just awful. So we're thinking of our guys like Brendan, our guys like Ellis Meek, you know, the Honest Heart Collective, all those guys that have given us their music to this podcast, and, you know, do whatever you can to support them, buy some merch, buy their CD, maybe do anything you can to help them out. But we hope everybody enjoys the Masters. We can't wait to chat with you next week about it, where I will be sipping on a nice bottle of red that I have won. Wait, I already have one, but this one's going to be even nicer after winning the Masters. Scotty, thank you again. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. We'll chat with you next week.